What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturer of the finest knife heat treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com. So welcome to Knife Talk. Now today we've got an amazingly talented young knife maker who, like me, mainly makes knives for the kitchen. So today we've got Timothy Ford from Sydney, Australia, who goes by the name of Ford Forged on Instagram. So hey Timothy, how are you?
I'm pretty good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, not a problem. It's really good to hear different perspectives too, because obviously you're just at the beginning of your journey into making knives. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Timothy.
Well, I've been making knives for just over a year now. I specialize mostly in Japanese kitchen knives, inspired by Japanese kitchen knives. I really like the styles and the function aspects of knife making that they have. It's about beauty, but it's also about using and making something usable.
Yes, yeah. Well, I completely agree. I mean, a knife to me is a completely beautiful thing, you know, but at the end of the day, it's a tool completely. I mean, you're just 16 now. So tell us how you got into making knives. That's quite an unusual hobby for a young man who, you know, let's face it, most 16-year-olds are either taking selfies or making prank videos. So how did you get into this?
Well, when I was about 13, I bugged my parents for about a year to make a charcoal forge in the backyard. And I never really figured out where my interest came from. I think I just watched people like Walter Sorrells on YouTube. And just really was inspired to make things because I've been making pretty much my whole life, just tinkering away in the backyard. And this was something that I could really get a hold of. And so I did a basic blacksmithing course at Thawa Valley Forge with Leela Haddad, who is also a young teenager like me. She's just a year younger than me, actually, and she's really talented. She's a knife maker, actually.
Yeah. Okay, so you say you've always made stuff. So what kind of stuff were you making before knives?
I always did a little bit of woodworking with my dad. I did a few school projects with family, friends. I learned how to weld and cut steel from a young age. And just small little odd jobs. If there was something around the house that I could fix or improve, I'd try. Probably wouldn't succeed, but I had fun trying and making things, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, you're probably five steps ahead of me. You've learned to weld, you're forging, and I'm just doing stock removal. So if you've always been making stuff, does that come directly from maybe a family member? Have you learned from them? Is it just something that you've just wanted to get out and do for yourself?
It's mostly just something that I've wanted to get out and do myself. I've always found that There was basic foundations that I learned from my father and my grandpa, but most of the skills I've learned are from the actual knife making community in Australia.
Hmm. Okay, that's interesting. So, community. I mean, how does that work? Do you have meetups, or is it sort of an online community?
So we do have Sydney Knife Makers meetups. I don't go to them too regularly. There's also the community we have on Facebook and Instagram. There's a lot of information sharing and really helpful tips and tricks that everyone sort of gives each other. It's not really a competitive environment where everyone's holding secrets. It's everyone pushing each other to make our knives better.
Yes, yeah. And do you use any of the knife making forums at all?
I don't. I am part of the Australian Knife Making Guild, though.
Right. Okay. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Now, I've noticed you actually exhibited at a knife show too. So that's something I've yet to do that. So tell me about that experience.
So I attended the 2017 Sydney Knife Show, and I sold 11 knives, actually.
Fantastic. Wow. So tell me about that very first knife that you made.
The very first knife.
That's the starter drug. That's the thing that gets you into it.
Yeah, it is. I had a charcoal brake drum forge that I made myself out of bricks, and that was a bit of a disaster. Blew out a hairdryer making that. And I sort of just hit a piece of metal a bunch till it was curvy, and then I filed it for too long. And then it was sort of shiny and not sharp at all. It wasn't heat treated, but it was just a starting point. And from there, you know, I sort of told my schoolmates about it. And that's where my first commission came from, which is something I shouldn't take on. But it was this guy at school, and he asked me to make this really, really specific knife with like two edges on it. So one on the main blade and then one at the tip.
Yes.
At the top of the tip. Like a clip point.
Yes, yeah.
And that was way out of my depth.
But sometimes that's what you need. It's the challenge that you need, isn't it, to get you to learn something new.
Yeah, and it took me way longer than I expected it to make because I only made one knife before it. But he was happy with it, and you know that's all that really matters, right? It wasn't heat treated either.
Oh, geez.
But
so it was good. It was good for butter. It was good for butter.
Yeah,
that's about it.
Yeah, it was. It was.
So, what do your family and friends think about the work that you're producing now?
Now they're all pretty proud. My parents like having sharp knives in the kitchen now.
Let's talk about one of our sponsors, Tormach. To get great razor sharp and repeatable edges, you're going to need a Tormach. To find out more, go to tormach.com. is TORMEK.com. Okay, let's get back to the show.
That as well as family, friends. They were at first a bit nervous of a passion of knife making.
Yes.
But as soon as they saw how good it was for me to make things, they were really quite invested and happy for me to do that.
That's great. So are you still in school at the moment?
I am.
Okay. And does school encourage you to take up blacksmithing? And I mean, do they even teach this kind of thing in schools anymore?
So I do woodworking at school. And my design and technology teacher is quite supportive of what I do, but they don't teach knife making at all, no.
Yes. Oh, obviously not knife making, but you still get the chance to use tools and so on.
Occasionally, yeah.
Okay, cool. I mean, I grew up in the UK, and it's just been from what I understand from sort of youngsters now, it's less and less of using tools and more sort
definitely.
More sort of theory work. So it's great that they, you know, they're encouraging you to do this. That's amazing.
I think there is still a basic standard in schools, but it's more starting to lean towards designing things. And like designing things for CAD and 3D printing and like milling and things like that. And those skills have their place and they're really important to learn. But the basic hand skills are, you know, where we have our foundations and where we really make our own objects. And I think schools are slowly losing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a real shame. Definitely. Real shame.
There was a lot more of it.
So I'm not a blacksmith. I'm just a knife maker, and stock removal is my thing. So the closest I get to changing the composition of metal really is just the heat treating process. So if I wanted to get into hand forging billets of steel or layering up my own Damascus, what words of advice would you have for a newcomer to blacksmithing like myself?
Oh, goodness. I've never actually made Damascus of my own yet. I've done basic cable Damascus.
Yeah.
For basic forging, get an anvil-ish object and a hammer and just go at it. You know, you really learn from how the metal moves under your hammer. Once you get that plastic bit of metal and you shape it to your will, you sort of gain a superpower, it's almost like. And it's like nothing else that you can really describe.
That would be a great Avengers, wouldn't it? Metal Man.
Would. Oh, man.
So you've grown up with social media, and obviously it plays such an important part in marketing work. So you're ahead of the game compared to a lot of the more established knife makers. But how else do you market your work?
Well, a lot of it is word of mouth. And then there's Instagram, and I do a bit of Facebook. I'm thinking about doing YouTube videos in the future where I get to a standard of my work where I'm comfortable with showing everyone the finite details of it.
I've just started doing that, a few YouTube videos, and man, it's a completely different skill. It's all about microphones and camera angles, and it's, you know, it's a whole new thing to learn.
It's crazy.
And you look at the likes of, you know, Alex Steele and so on, and his channels, you just think the amount of work that goes into what he does is just incredible.
Are you enjoying making YouTube videos, though?
Yes, but it just takes a lot of time. And, you know, it's certainly nothing that I'll, you know, consider doing, you know, to the degree that, you know, some of the bigger names do. But it's just, you know, every now and again you do something, you think maybe somebody could learn from this, so I'll just sort of document that, you know. So that's the whole purpose of it, because I don't think it's much of a marketing tool really, because I don't think, you know, potential customers wouldn't really come across that. It's just really other knife makers, you know.
Yeah, well, I guess right now that might be the case, but there's definitely a lot of people who don't make knives and still like watching the process of doing things like that. But I guess my question for you is, what tips and tricks do you have for making YouTube videos from your experience?
Yeah, well, I'm no good at it, but what I'm finding difficult and what I think makes a huge difference to any video is audio quality. Because quite often, I mean, I watch a lot of YouTube videos, and quite often I'm doing something else, so it's the audio really that I'm picking up on. But a workshop doesn't have the best acoustics, you know. We've got lots of shiny surfaces, lots of stuff to sound, to bounce and reverb around. So it's pretty difficult to get a really good audio. So I really admire, you know, the likes of Alex Steele and Jeremy from Simple Little Life, who do these great videos. But the audio is just as good as the visual aspect too. So yeah,
that's where expensive microphones come into play.
It is, yes, yeah. And I mean, for the podcast here, I use quite an expensive condenser mic, but that doesn't really work well for video, having this big sort of mic and shield up in front of your face. So I think clip-on mics are maybe the way to go. But they can be so, so expensive.
They can be.
Just like setting up a workshop.
It's another tool.
It's another tool, exactly. So, I mean, I ask this to everybody, but if you're anything like me, you've got this huge shopping list of things that you want to buy for this perfect dream workshop. So what's on the list? What's on your list?
Well, I had the sort of fancy out there induction furnace sort of ideas, but they don't really come into the practical sense. I guess for more practical uses, I'd really like to buy a disc sander. I found that getting surfaces really flat would be made so much easier if I had one of those. Also, basic candle shaping is a lot more easily done on those sorts of disc sanders.
Yes, yeah. I mean, what I'm using, I'm using my standard sort of belt grinder, my 2x72 for both steel and wood at the moment. So I'm using different belts, obviously, for the wood. But mine doesn't have a, you can't change the speed on it. So quite often,
that's what you need.
Exactly. You've got to be so careful that you're not going to burn the wood, which I've done on, you know, numerous occasions. So when you try to sort of sand that off, you find that the burn edge is actually deeper than you think and so on. So yeah, I'm totally with you. I completely need a sander specifically for wood too. So tell me about your process. Do you work on commissioned work, or do you have a load of knives and then try to sell them? How does that work?
So I used to make just knives as I go because I didn't really have too many custom orders. So I just make knives that I wanted to make. But the business has sort of picked up a little bit and I've been getting quite a few custom orders. So most of my time is spent doing those. It's also getting that balance between school. But then... there's also the knife shows that I go to, so I also quite enjoy making those one-off projects as well, just for those shows to sort of show off what I can do to lots of people, yeah.
Yeah, and do you have like a core range that you try to replicate each time, or is each knife completely individual?
I do have a few basic designs, so just your common chef's knives and things like that. But apart from that, it's all pretty different. Handles are usually quite different, sort of just like experimenting with different grinds and things like that, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. So you just mentioned actually about it can be difficult to fit this around schoolwork and so on. So is that the plan after school? Is it to make knives, or do you have a different career in mind?
Well, I'd like to try going full-time for a year after school, sort of like my gap year.
Yeah.
And sort of see how that goes and see if my business grows from that or fails from that. And if it's, you know, successful from there, I don't see why I wouldn't do it for more than a year.
Yeah, that's a great
idea. If it's not quite enough, then I'd like to go into carpentry and still use my hands and make things here.
Okay, cool. Okay. So, I mean, you've been doing this for a little while now. Tell us about some of those mistakes that you made at the beginning.
Oh, the mistakes.
Have you got all your fingers left? I guess you've still got 10 fingers.
I still got 10 fingers.
That's good.
I have sanded the tips off a few times, but nothing too major. The mistakes are usually... warping and cracking of knives. When I first started, my quench tank was just a baking tray sort of thing filled with canola oil, and it overheated really quickly, and it destroyed knives like you couldn't believe. I had like fractures going through half of the knives that I put out, and it just wasn't good enough until I contacted Karim, my mentor from Thawa Valley Forge, He was like, mate, what are you doing? Get a bigger quench tank.
Well, weirdly, that's something that I've been going through this week. So I've been having just a lot of bends and warps in blades just over the last couple of weeks. Mm. And I couldn't really work out why. Nothing has changed in my setup. But I just think, I think I need a bigger quench tank. So I had a great tip, actually, from Jeff Fader, who I've interviewed in the past on the show, with regard to warped blades. So it's that old classic of, you know, put it in a vise with, you know, three maybe drill bits or something that you can just sort of bend the warp back out. But what he told me, and I wasn't sure if it would work, but it seems to work really well, is a really sort of flat bar, quite a thick flat bar. You put your knife on that clamp to there, just using a penny or a coin where the bend is, so you're sort of overcorrecting slightly. But then put that into the temper oven, the whole rig into the temper oven to do a temper. And it puts a lot less stress, obviously, on the blade as it's straightening. And it's fixed every time. So, so thanks, Jeff, if you're listening. It's really helped me out. So I've had about 7 or 8 knives over the last maybe 10 days, and they've all been slightly bent or warped in some way. So I just put them through another temper cycle on this little rig, and they're all straight as an arrow. So hopefully somebody else could find that as, you know, of use too. So what now, if anything, are you struggling with? Is there anything which you're really sort of hitting the wall with, and you're thinking, oh man, how do I get through this?
So I recently bought a radiused platen to do S grinds on my kitchen knives.
Nice.
And I've ruined a few blades by making them too thin and overheating the centers of them.
Right.
So they have big holes in them. And so I've been really having troubles with getting that right, getting that S grind correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, sort of overheating on the platen. I can't remember who had one, but I saw a video of somebody when they had a water cooled platen. And that was amazing. So you have these tubes on the back of the platen, which pumps water around, which keeps your platen nice and cold. So that's going to be on my shopping list too. So it's an expensive hobby to get into, especially at such a young age, with steels, belts, finishing papers, wood, etc. So where do you tend to get all of your consumables?
So when I first started, I really relied on the generosity of my parents and Thower Valley Forge. I got materials from them, and then when I started selling a few knives here and there, I bought proper steels from Gamaco Artisan Supplies in Sydney.
Right.
And Dimitri actually talked about Artisan Supplies run by Corin Lockhart.
Yeah, I mean, I always ask this question because, particularly me in a rural area, it's always hard to basically just find consumables. So everything I get is basically shipped from the States. I'm just hoping there's people listening who may be in your area and they think, aha, let's go there instead. Okay, that's cool. So where do you find your inspiration?
So there's a bunch of kitchen knife makers in Australia, actually. People like Dimitri, who you've interviewed before.
Yes.
There's also Mert Tanzu and Oatley Knives. Those guys are pretty good. There's also Tristone, and they're all really high quality chef's knives, Japanese chef's knives and things like that. And their quality is just astounding. And it's really amazing to see what they do. And it's always pushed me to make my knives a bit better just to try and get even close to them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've got a few as well when I see, and I just think, man, I just need to give up. I'm never going to get that good, you know?
Don't have that defeatist attitude. You'll get there. You'll get there.
One day. So you talked about people's work who you've been admiring, but where can people see your work?
So I have an Instagram, which is FordForged. You can also find me on Facebook, which is FordForged again. And my website is www.fordforged.com.
Man, I should have guessed each one of them.
It's pretty good.
So you're sort of specializing in kitchen knives at the moment. Is that something that you really want to sort of concentrate on, just kitchen knives?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I've never really had an interest for any other sort of knife. I just like making things that'll be used every day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for me, kitchen knives is just because I'm so greedy. I'm always in the kitchen. So, yeah, it's a tool for me to use every day. But also, I mean, you know, I've always been from the UK, just very recently moved to France, where laws are slightly different with regards to sort of knives that you can carry. But specifically in the UK, you can't really carry a knife. And, you know, there's no need to carry a knife. But I know we've got a lot of listeners from the US. And, you know, carrying knives, carrying guns is part of a culture there. It's very different. But here in the UK, they're trying to put a bill through at the moment where they're one of the areas of the bill is that people won't be able to post knives anymore.
I saw that actually.
Yeah, so I mean, you can understand sort of why they think that is a good thing because it stops, you know, youngsters getting hold of knives and all the rest of it. But you know, let's face it, if you want to get hold of a knife, you go to the kitchen, pull one out of the drawer. But it's becoming a problem for knife makers delivering to the UK because they won't be able to do that. So yeah, so everybody's got their fingers crossed that this bill doesn't get passed. But what's the situation in Australia? Can you post knives? Can you carry knives? What's the situation there?
So for posting knives, it's pretty relaxed. You just have to have them packaged properly, and then you know the government doesn't give you any issues for that. With carrying them, you're not allowed to carry knives out in public unless you have a reason, and that reason can be things like entertainment. But if a police officer pulls you aside and says, "Why have you got a knife?" You say, "I'm a knife thrower," they're going to give you a ticket or take you to jail. So
so I think we're both on the safe route, really, making kitchen knives, aren't we? They've got a purpose. They need to be in the kitchen, and they're being used every day.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So people know where they can find you online. They've heard all about your beginnings into knife making. Tell us about your style specifically. What sets your knife apart from others?
Well, I like to use materials that not many other people use. So I've been using a lot of dyed maple burl from a Australian guy who makes it. And it's this really beautiful colored timber. And so it's just your general stabilized wood, but it's also got purples and greens and all sorts of amazing colors. You can get it really however you want, yeah.
Nice. So it really makes that wood pop then, I assume.
It does.
Yeah. I've just started sort of stabilizing my own wood, and I've yet to experiment with dyes. But some of the effects that I've seen are incredible, what some people are doing there. And your choices of steel, do you tend to use the same steels over and over, or do you experiment? How does that work?
So recently I've been experimenting with the new stainless called Nitro V, if you've heard of it.
Yes, yes.
I've been sending it off to heat treat elsewhere, so I've been making knives out of that. I've had pretty good results with it. But for my high carbon steels, I just use 1075.
Yeah.
Which is just a basic high carbon steel. It's quite tough. And really, I don't see any issues with using that for kitchen knives because it performs. And if it performs, then it's good enough. I would like to experiment with other carbon steels. Especially when I start moving into Damascus and things like that. But for now, 1075 is my way to go.
Cool. Okay, that's cool. So how do you test your blades?
So for the most part, it's people using them. and people giving me their feedback. I've given my knives to chefs around in Sydney, and they've tested them and given me feedback on that. But then I also use them myself in my own kitchen. And I do occasionally snap a blade in half to look at its grain and things like that. Beat against wood to see its edge retention and things like that, yeah.
That's disheartening, isn't it? Testing a blade to destruction when you put so much work in it. It's like, ah. Okay, so thank you so much for your time. It's really good to hear, you know, other people's perspectives on making knives. And for somebody so young to be so knowledgeable, you know, I've learned a lot from you. Hopefully others have too.
Thank you.
So again, thank you so much for your time, and hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Thank you for having me.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.